Shalom, welcome back to Shavuot, the Feast of Oaths, Part 2. We left off in the last part with slide 16, where we just got done reading Exodus 24, verses 3 through 8. So as you may recall, we've already established how Shavuot has become known as the Feast of Oaths from all of the Hebrew words stemming from the word Shavuot. And I began to give you some additional resources to back that up. So now as we continue to move through the PowerPoint on slide 17, this is another resource that we have been using to get understanding in ancient Near Eastern covenants. And it's an article by a gentleman named Rene Lopez, and this is from part two of his article. On page one, he says that foundationally, berit, which is covenant, signifies a binding agreement between two parties. The function of berit is basically that of an oath, commitment, or bond between two parties. On page 87, the oath, at the conclusion of a covenant, the vassal usually uttered an oath. This gave the assurance to the suzerain that the stipulations of the treaty would be kept. Furthermore, an oath ceremony also served to secure bilateral faithfulness of the parties. On page 88 of this same article, he says, oaths were usually uttered at the conclusion of a treaty, which implied acceptance of its terms. However, Israel invoked an oath in Exodus 19:8, all that Yah has spoken we will do before hearing the covenant. Then, after hearing the covenant in Shemot 24:3-7, they consented again. Now, I'm going to propose to you guys and show you that Israel actually told Moshe and Yah three times that they would keep the covenant. And we're going to talk about that here soon. One other additional resource is from an article by Gertzenberger's Covenant and Commandment. And he says concerning oaths, so oath and stipulations are correlated expressions of the concluded covenant itself, or the oath is the divine sanction of the agreement as affirmed in the covenant declaration and as laid down in the stipulations. Now, so we've laid out multiple resources to show what a covenant oath means in light of ancient Near Eastern structure and language. So what is the oath made by our king, our suzerain, Adonai Zefaot, at the time of Shavuot? In Exodus 19:3, and you guys can all follow along either here, or I'm using, basically all the scriptures I'm quoting from are from the Esword Scriptures version. So in Exodus 19:3, Moshe went up to Elohim, and Yah called to him from the mountain, saying, this is what you are to say to the house of Yaakov, and declare to the children of Israel. You have seen what I did to the Midianites, and how I bore you on eagle's wings, and brought you to myself. And now, if you diligently obey my voice, and shall guard my covenant, then you shall be my treasured possession above all the peoples, for all the earth is mine. And you shall be to me a reign of Konim and a Kodesh nation. Those are the words which you are to speak to the children of Israel. And Moshe came and called for the elders of the people and set before them all these words which Yah has commanded him. Now see here, this is the main oath that Yah has declared if Israel would keep all of the stipulations and all of the commitments and the commandments that he's going to set forth in his covenant. One of the things we have to remember is that the covenant at Sinai is intertwined with a direct oath and covenant by Yah with Abraham, Yitzhak, and Yaakov. I mean, all of the covenant elements, all of the different elements that we read about throughout the scriptures, and we've heard the different teachings on, as far as the salt covenant, threshold covenant, blood covenant, the marriage covenant, You know, the covenant of the peace is every one of these is intertwined with itself to make one beautiful tapestry of covenant that is only designed by Yah. It's totally amazing. So one covenant never, ever, ever cancels the other. They're always, always intertwined. So the covenant at Sinai is connected to that. And the covenant which we're referring to is back in Genesis 22. And the messenger of Yah called to Abraham a second time from the heavens and said, "By myself I have sworn, declares Yah, because you have done this and have not withheld your son, your only son, that I shall certainly bless you, and I shall certainly increase your seed as the stars of the heavens and as the sand which is on the seashore, and let your seed possess the gate of their enemies. And in your seed all the nations of the earth shall be blessed, because you have obeyed my voice." Now this is pertaining to the binding of Yitzhak. So this is the main oath that is given by Yah to bless everything that Abraham does, and to bless Abraham's seed. And he's sworn it by his own name. Okay? So it's up to Abba. Once he does that, is he has to maintain, you know, his oath. So how's he going to do that? You know, this is exactly what Shaul's talking about in Hebrews 6. Let's take a look at that. Now, there's so much I wanted to put in here as far as Hebrews is concerned. But for the sake of time and 53 slides in the first teaching on Shavuot, we can stem from this, you know, so many different areas and subjects later on. So I had to keep it at a minimum, although I would have liked to add some more. But let's take a look at Hebrews 6, 13 through 20. Pay attention to the stuff that's highlighted in yellow. These are the key points. "For Elohim, having promised Abraham, since he could swear by no one greater, swore by himself." We just seen that in Genesis 22. "Saying, truly, blessing, I shall bless you, and increasing, I shall increase you. And so, after being patient, he obtained the promise. For men do indeed swear by the one greater, and an oath for confirmation is for them an end of all dispute. In this way, Elohim, resolving to show even more clearly to the heirs of promise the unchangeableness of his purpose, confirmed it by an oath, so that by two unchangeable matters, in which it is impossible for Elohim to lie, we might have strong encouragement, we who have fled for refuge to lay hold of the expectations set before us, which we have as an anchor of the life, both safe and firm, and entering into that within the veil, where Yeshua has entered as a forerunner for us, having become high priest forever to the order of Melchizedek." So we begin to see what Shaul is trying to discuss in the book of Hebrews. Okay, everything that he's talking about, everything in Romans and Corinthians, everything reverts back to covenant language and understanding the depths of the context of ancient Near Eastern covenant structure. It's totally amazing. So how does Adonai Zephaot keep his oath sworn by his own name to our forefathers, when ultimately Israel, Abraham's seed, should ultimately suffer the curses of breaking the covenant due to willful, rebellious, intentional sin? Now, if you remember from multiple teachings that Rico has done, and by studying this stuff for yourselves, as you know, there absolutely was no sacrifice for willful, intentional sin. This is why Mashiach had to come. This is why we were expelled from the land. This is why we were divorced. The northern 10 tribes were scattered and still remain scattered to this day. Okay? So you guys can go back and revisit those teachings that Rico's done, and I'm sure that everything that he's going to be teaching from now on, I mean, will be in a totally new light with ancient covenant structure, with all of the knowledge that Abba has bestowed. And I'm telling you, this is an absolute message that needs to be heard. The Hebraic roots community and everybody that we come in contact needs to understand the depths of our covenant. I am total awe, and I'm just totally amazed. Let's move on. Slide 23. Going back to what I was saying is that Scat, you know, Yah keeps his oath, you know, and he's righteous, so he has to maintain the word that he kept to Abraham. So by scattering Israel to the nations for disobedience and then sending Yeshua his right arm as Mashiach to restore them, us, back into the covenant for committing willful intentional sin, this in turn opens the door for the nations to also become grafted into the covenant with Israel by confessing faith in the Mashiach as our Redeemer for breaking the covenant, even though we should certainly suffer all of the curses that were laid out before us in Deuteronomy. I mean, we absolutely do not deserve to be restored. And this is going to point us right to Romans 10. Okay. Which we probably should go back. Let's before I move on to slide 23 and just pick out verse 9. Let me pull up my e-sword here. And let's go ahead and read through all of Romans chapter 9. I pray that you guys are understanding this and you're grasping on how important our covenant is and how we need to maintain focus and stop messing with all of the other stuff that all it does is hinder everything, and it doesn't help us progress in our walk. So, okay, Romans 9. Was it Romans 9? I think it was Romans 10. Romans 10, I'm sorry. Okay. Romans 10. Truly, brothers, my heart's desire and prayer to Elohim for Yisrael is for deliverance. For I bear them witness that they have an ardor for Elohim, but not according to knowledge. For not knowing the righteousness of Elohim and seeking to establish their own righteousness, they did not subject themselves to the righteousness of Elohim. Oh my goodness, this is unbelievable. Let's just stop right there for 1 second, okay? Just these three verses alone, you know, I've seen a few different comments and heard some stories of how we're hearing, you know, so many people thinking that we don't have to keep the Torah, we don't have to keep the covenant and the stipulations and commandments that Yah has given us. And this totally proves that, you know, we must absolutely maintain the righteousness of Elohim. And we can't disregard the Torah. It totally baffles my mind at times. Anyway, let's move on. Romans 10:4. For Mashiach is the goal of the Torah, unto righteousness to everyone who believes. For Moshe writes about the righteousness which is the Torah, the man who does these shall live by them. But the righteousness of belief speaks in this way. Do not say in your heart, who shall ascend into the heavens, that is to bring Mashiach down, or who shall descend into the abyss, that is to bring Mashiach up from the dead. But what does it say? The word is near you, in your mouth and in your heart. This is the word of belief that we are proclaiming. And before I move on to verse 9, what we just read in verse 8, Shaul is talking about the word is near you in your mouth and in your heart. This is exactly what Moshe was saying in Deuteronomy. This is exactly what we read in the Siddur when we do the Shema. And he says, let these things be in your heart and in your mind, and to love Yah, your Elohim, with all of your heart, your soul, and your mind. I am a strong, strong believer that, you know, the commandments were always meant to be in our hearts. You know, it's when we follow Yah with our whole hearts and not with just the act of just doing it to do it, this is when we begin to learn a loving relationship between a king and his servant. It's totally amazing. Okay, verse 9. That if you confess with your mouth the Master Yeshua and believe in your heart that Elohim has raised him from the dead, you shall be saved. For with the heart one believes unto righteousness, which is what we just talked about, and one confesses with the mouth, and so is saved. Because the Scripture says, whoever puts his trust in him shall not be put to shame. because there is no distinction between Yehudite, the Greek, for the same master of all is rich to all those calling upon him. For everyone who calls on the name of Yah shall be saved. How then shall they call on him in whom they have not believed? And how shall they believe in him in whom they have not heard? And how shall they hear without one proclaiming? And how shall they proclaim if they are not sent? As it has been written, how pleasant are the feet of those who bring the good news of peace, who bring the good news for the good. However, not all obeyed the good news. For Yeshayahu says, Yah, who has believed our report? So then belief comes by hearing, and hearing by the word of Elohim. But I ask, did they not hear? Yes, indeed. Their voice went out to all the earth, and their words to the ends of the world. But I ask, did Yisrael not know? First Moshe says, I shall provoke you to jealousy by those who are not a nation. I shall enrage you by an unwise nation. And Yeshayahu boldly says, I was found by those not seeking me. I was made manifest to those not asking for me. And to Yisrael he says, all day long I have stretched out my hands to disobedient and to back-talking people. Okay, now that we've read the entire chapter of Romans 10, let's take a look at Romans 10, 9, verse 9. Okay, this is key. This all ties in with how it is that Yah is able to keep his oath, you know, to Abraham to bless his seed and to have his seed as many as the stars in the heavens, and that we will be able to enter back into the land promised to our forefathers. Verse 9, that if you confess with your mouth the Master Yeshua and believe in your heart that Elohim has raised him from the dead, you shall be saved. Okay, now you guys have all heard this before. We're just going over it again so we can make these same connections, okay? Remember, you can go back, and I have it written down here at the bottom. Take a listen to Rico's MP3 that he has on the website, What is the Confession of Faith? And you'll totally understand this in even deeper than just this one slide. But if we look at the Greek word that's used for confess, it's homologeo. You know, and it actually means, it's pertaining to covenant language. When you are confessing with your mouth, you're proclaiming that you're going to enter into the covenant with the person that you are proclaiming. Confession is made, giving thanks, promise. So in context, this means that the one who is confessing faith in Yeshua is coming into covenant and binding themselves by oath, which is the same thing that Yah has done, with him, and agrees to the covenant in which Yeshua has presented or is walking in himself. So as the lesser king, so to speak, okay, which Yeshua is the lesser king and Yah is the greater king, or master to the suzerain Yah, Yeshua's covenant is the exact same covenant, you know, as Abba's, which means the agreement absolutely means that we're to keep and to be loyal, to have a loving relationship through Yeshua with the Father in keeping the Torah and all the commandments and the stipulations laid out forth in the Torah. And this is what restores us back to the kingdom. Okay. Now you got to keep in mind that ancient world culture and context, that when a covenant was cut between a suzerain and a vassal, and this means that as long as the vassal was keeping the commitments of the covenant with the king, no one else could come against that nation or vassal without having to face, you know, the full wrath or sovereignty of the suzerain king that they were in covenant with and all of his resources. And on the other hand, it also means that if the vassal broke the commitments of the covenant, it also would suffer the consequences by that suzerain or king. Now, to elaborate a little bit more on this, to put it in perspective, is that as far as Yah's kingdom is concerned, and as we see throughout the Torah, is that when we break certain commitments or we break certain commandments, you know, there's different levels of how, you know, how Yah and how the elders and how, you know, the leaders of Israel were to handle, you know, breaking of certain commandments, which we see that all throughout the Torah. You know, this is very different than most of the other ancient Near Eastern treaties that were made is that if you broke anything, I mean, it was full wrath. Most of the time, it meant utter destruction for the vassal. So we can see the different parallels. So even though we're investigating the texts and the history that we have pertaining to ancient structure of covenants, you know, we're able to look beyond that and see the greater picture and the eternal kingdom and the eternal covenant. You know, you guys have to remember, always remember that, you know, ancient covenant structure was known all throughout the ancient world. This stuff is nothing new. Okay. Now, before I go on in the PowerPoint, I want to touch base on one other thing as far as, you know, understanding if a suzerain comes into covenant with a vassal nation. One of the things that we need to remember is that also meant whenever another nation would come in conflict or come against the other vassal nation that was in covenant with the suzerain, that also meant that nation had the utter protection of the suzerain. So what I want to make mention of is that right now there seems to be a very, very, very strong flavor and desire to constantly be focusing on end times and all of the things that may be happening around the world and talking about the tribulation. And while we do need to absolutely be aware of, you know, our surroundings and study these areas and, you know, and understand fully what the scriptures say concerning this, my concern is that I've seen so many times where people seem to make this their main focus, and it actually becomes a hindrance, because if we do this, then we're not able to stay focused on the areas that help us to grow and help our relationship with the Father, you know, to become closer to Him, and how we are to maintain a focus and our eyes on Him. With all of this understanding of the things that we're learning pertaining to the ancient covenant, I talked with Rico a little bit about this today, is that the word fear totally has new meaning. Okay, we have to make the distinction between being afraid and being fearful. Okay, fearful means that we have no hope. Okay, and we, as Yah's people, as the servants of the kingdom, we have hope. We have hope that our Father Avinu has restored us back to His covenant. You know, has redeemed us through His right arm, His Mashiach Yeshua. So, just I would like everybody to just be mindful of maintaining their focus on the things that are going to help you grow and to grow your faith. You know, so when you look at the book of Revelation, once you begin to dive into, you know, ancient covenant language, and you're reading Revelation and you're reading about, even as we see that the enemy is going to be coming after the woman Israel, we don't have to be fearful. You know, we have the full sovereignty and backing of the King of the Universe. Okay, so in any case, I just keep that in mind and try to maintain focus and make sure you're always progressing. Okay, moving on. Slide 26. One of the things that we're also going to be discussing, and I'm sure Rico's already going to be laying this teaching out, is coming to know that the entire structure of the book of Deuteronomy is a typical suzerain vassal treaty format. It's structured like we've already been talking about. You know, there was a typical format covenant document and structure that was used all throughout the ancient Near East. And This the book of Deuteronomy is a reiteration of the covenant at Mount Sinai to the second generation in the wilderness prior to entering the land. Avinu Malkeinu, our Father and our King, states his oath to Israel again in chapter 29. Let's take a look at that. Therefore, you shall guard the words of this covenant and do them so that you prosper in all that you do. All of you are standing today before Yah, your Elohim, your leaders, your tribes, your elders, your officers, all of the men of Yisrael, your little ones, your wives, and your sojourner who is in the midst of your camp, from the one who cuts your wood to the one who draws your water, so that you should enter into covenant with Yah your Elohim and into his oath, which Yah your Elohim makes with you today, in order to establish you today as a people for himself, and he himself be your Elohim, as he has spoken to you in it, as he has sworn to your fathers, to Abraham, to Yitzhak, and to Yaakov. And not to with you alone I am making this covenant and this oath, but with him who stands here and with us today before Yah our Elohim, but as well as with him who is not here with us today. So this is Yah's reiteration right before Moshe dies and Joshua takes over to lead Israel into the promised land. Now, here's what I was telling you about before, about Israel gives their oath, their agreement to keep the covenant three different times. Okay, we've already touched base on the first one, which is prior to hearing the commandments in Exodus 20. So Exodus 19:8, and all the people answered together and said, "All that Yah has spoken we shall do." So Moshe brought back the words of the people to Yah. The second time that they affirmed their oath, or they spoke their oath, is at the ratification ceremony prior to the offerings in Exodus 24. And I think we'll probably go back and remember I told you early on, though, this Exodus 24 is such a key set of scriptures. We're going to go back and talk a little bit more about this. But in Exodus 24, verse 3, Moshe came and related to the people all the words of Yah and all the right rulings. And all the people answered with one voice and said, "All the words which Yah has spoken, we shall do." And the third time is prior to the sprinkling of the blood that Moshe did after he offered the sacrifice. Okay. Verse 7, and he took the book of the covenant and read in the hearing of the people, and they said, "All that Yah has spoken, we shall do and obey." So we have three witnesses. You know, they spoke their oath three different times. Now, Acts chapter 2, what we've been hearing Rico talking about the last month or so in his teaching on the book of Acts. He's got three or four different parts now just on chapter 2. What was going on there, as you guys already know, is that this is also an affirmation of the covenant on Shavuot at Sinai. This is what goes on all throughout synagogues and during, you know, temple times. And this is what everybody was doing, is they were regathering and rededicating themselves loyally, you know, in full understanding of who Yah was, and recommitting themselves to keeping the covenant. Okay, and let's read these five verses real quick. And when the day of the festival of weeks, the festival of Shavuot, had come, they were all with one mind and in one place. And suddenly there came a sound from heaven, as of a rushing mighty wind, and it filled all the house where they were sitting. And there appeared to them divided tongues as a fire, and settled on each one of them. And they were all filled with the Ruach HaKodesh, and began to speak with other languages or tongues, as the Ruach gave them to speak. Now in Yerushalayim there were dwelling Yehudim, dedicated men from every nation under the heaven. Okay, now let's go back and look at these again. Especially verse 1. And when the day of the festival of weeks, festival of Shavuot, had come, they were all with one mind and in one place. We know already, you know, this is nothing new. We're just making mention of it again. We know that there was a specific service and a set of prayers done at the Beit HaMikdash on Shavuot, including a recitation of the Ten Commandments. And you, I've already told you guys to go back and re-listen or listen to Rico's teaching on the Book of Acts. It's part 3 where he makes mention of that particular reference. Okay. So everyone who was there at the temple during the time of Shavuot, just after Yeshua rose to the Father, was recommitting themselves to Yah and the covenant that was made at Sinai, all with one mind and one accord and in one place. Oh my goodness. If we could just learn how to do this today. We're working on it though. So I think we're going to have to probably take a break here in a few minutes, because I think my 30 minutes for part 2 is just about up. But real quick, slide 31, all we're doing is we're going back to the recap of the typical ancient Near Eastern suzerain vassal covenant structure. And I'm highlighting the ratification ceremony with us. We're going to be talking about that, you know, when we come back. So let's go ahead and take another break, and I'll come back for part 3. Shalom.